So everyone sees it as fairly fast and effective way of resolving these things so they can go about performing on the contracts.
There are some original sin activities that can cause a procurement to go off the rails and result in a protest. What can agencies be on the lookout for to make sure that they don't head that direction from the outset?
You know, there are a couple of things that you find particularly when you look at the patterns in the bid protest. You get one kind of result when you talk to members of the acquisition community, whether it's business people or government agency officials or attorneys involved. You get a related but somewhat different picture. Some of the kinds of things, you'll never get rid of all of the risk. I mean, and whenever you have risk and uncertainty, people might create errors, and some errors are inevitable. And so you find in the patterns, for example, that even though more acquisitions are products, more bid protests are related to services that are contracted out. It's very hard to measure performance of services when someone proposes to provide a service for the government. Sort of knowing how to pick among the service providers is more difficult, and that leads to the potential for an error in making those judgments that could produce a bid protest. But there's not a whole lot you can do about that. It's endemic in the system. But on the other hand, there are cases where you have, one case that I'm citing in the report that I was told about was you have, say, a field operation in the Department of Defense that decides they need a particular product, and they go about designing the product, maybe even, you know, having a company develop the product and say, okay, this is what we need in my military unit in the field. Then they hand that over to a contracting agency, and the contracting agency now has to actually find a vendor consistent with the laws governing the way vendors can be found. And that can put them in a tough position because maybe they're not supposed to do a sole source contract. The laws are, you know, sort of say, you know, they kind of want to discourage, they want to encourage competitive bidding. Well, the problem there is that the contracting agency officials were not involved early in the decision of, well, what is this product we need and what's feasible and what can the market provide? And so you had a bit of a disconnect structurally, sort of a misalignment, if you will, between the people who have to go out and write the RFPs and get this product for the field unit. Some of the key decision makers weren't involved, as some of the contract officials, if they had been involved earlier in the decision making, they might have led to a better decision that could have avoided a bid protest. So some of it is a question of who has the authority to do what when. It's not always quite aligned. Another example is training. I mean, there's pretty substantial recognition by everybody I talk to that the amount of government contracting really ballooned in the late 90s and 2000s, and the size of the acquisition workforce stayed the same. And there are arguments now that the size of that workforce is going to increase by thousands of people. But it's actually not as much the number of people. It's how well trained they are to understand the rules under which government contracting occurs and to understand the way businesses operate so they can make the most effective decisions. So better training, for example, would help from the get-go.
We're speaking with Stephen Mazur. He's a professor of public policy and public management at Willamette University. And it sounds like with respect to setting requirements and knowing what the market is capable of involving the contract officer, sounds like the myth-busting campaign that OMB is on to get more pre-solicitation communication between the government and vendors would pay off down the line.
Yes, I think in general, one of the findings is that there should be improved and better and more transparent communications from government contracting agencies. You find quite a range from agencies that are, you know, sort of divulging the minimal amount they need to divulge to agencies that are extremely forthcoming in working with the business community. And, you know, Congress and GAO have worked diligently to try and encourage more transparency by allowing vendors who aren't successful to request a debriefing. But at a debriefing, the agency is supposed to tell them why, what they could have done to improve, why they didn't receive the contract. But you get a wide variety of behaviors across agencies in those debriefings, although the Office of Secretary of Defense has been taking steps to try and make that more uniform and encourage more disclosure. What the agencies have some fear of is that the more they disclose, the more a company or an attorney for that company will find a basis for a bid protest. But in general, if they're more forthcoming up front in the design of the solicitation, one would hope that would reduce the likelihood of a bid protest. But again, there's some risk that's inherent in this that they'll never completely eliminate.
Let me ask you this. As you note in your executive summary, the number of protests has been steadily increasing by quite a substantial amount, and there were more than 2,300 in the fiscal year 2011. But might there be some good coming out of the increased protests?
Two things. One, I think you have to put the whole bid protest process in perspective. A year or two ago, I can't recall, then Secretary of Defense Gates gave a talk in which he said in a given year, there were millions, I think the number, I can't recall exactly, like 8 million contract actions. Now, not every contract action that the government takes as part of its contracting process is protestable. But even when you take out of that enormous figure the number of and reduce it to those contract actions that companies are allowed to file a protest about, you still have millions, yet you only have a couple of thousand bid protests. So really, one could argue that the number of bid protests is really very, very small. It's just that when there's a bid protest, most of them are not sustained. And of those that are sustained, in the great majority of the cases, most of the vendors who originally won will still win. That is, it's kind of rare for the protester to actually ultimately win the final contract. It's just that all of the subsequent contracts, if you will, occur sort of in the shadow of those bid protest results that are sustained. So when GAO does sustain a protest, then everybody else sort of pays attention and says, oh, I got to make sure I'm doing it that way. And that's some of the good that comes out of the bid protest system. It's a way of sort of the people who are best informed at the ground level, who know what's going on at the agencies and in the business community, are of course the people who are vendors and are trying to win government contracts. So the bid protest system gives those businesses the incentive to sort of monitor, if you will, sort of police the system. And at some point, you could probably have too many bid protests and say, yeah, the more bid protests, the more the acquisition community is educated about the appropriate way to do things. Obviously, at some point, I don't know what that number would be, you would say, yeah, well, 2,000 is enough to do that. Maybe 5,000 is overkill, I don't know. But in general, the system serves a very good purpose of helping the government actually police itself.